The force has a dark and a light side. That's black magic and white magic. The doorway into the occult is an altered state of consciousness. Let the force take over. That's an altered state of consciousness. Yoda is a yogi.
And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. We'd rather reprove them.
Ahsoka means love and light.
Welcome to Conspiracy in the Force, Season 3, Star Wars in the New Age Deception. With me, Conspiracy Kyle.
All things that are reproved are made manifest by the light. I am the way, the truth, and the life.
Hey, Conspiracy Kyle here. Today's episode is a special episode. This is an interview I did with Raven on his show called The Raven's Watch. I'll link in the show notes to all of his content. We talk a lot about Star Wars, the woke stuff within there, the New Age stuff within there. And then we also talk about a lot of other things, you know, in the music industry, the rap industry, how things have changed over time with media and whatnot. We talk about a lot of different things. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Like I said, I'll put links to his content below if you want to follow him. God bless.
Okay, in 3, 2, 1, welcome back, guys, to another episode of The Raven's Watch. Today's guest is Conspiracy Kyle. I met Conspiracy Kyle over here through Twitter. He has his very own podcast. Kyle, why don't you tell the audience where they can find you and where they can find your show?
Sure. So like you said, my name is Conspiracy Kyle. I did Conspiracy with a K just because, you know, that won't get shadow banned. But it still does. But anyways, my podcast is called Conspiracy in the Force. You can find it on all major podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google, etc. And then I post the podcast up to YouTube, Rumble, BitChute, a few other places as well, Odyssey. So a few other places as well, you can catch the audio podcast.
Now, Kyle, your stuff is really interesting to me because it is, your focal is Star Wars. You know, we're talking the biggest sci-fi blockbuster film probably in the, I would say, in the history of Hollywood, honestly. Yeah. If you think about the cultural impact that a movie has had, Star Wars is above and beyond at the forefront of your mind when it comes to movies of that magnitude. And your point of contention is that there is embedded within the Star Wars films and mythology a huge body of what this is how I would phrase it, sort of subliminal messaging, New Age messaging, and symbolism that goes just over everybody's head. And I certainly don't think that those two things can be separated, one being the magnitude and the cultural impact and how it set the tone for future sci-fi movies from then forward, and two, the messaging that's hidden within it. In fact, they're probably both symbiotic to one another and can lean on each other in regards to the success that the film has had. Can you tell us a little bit about, well, I would like to first know how you started sniffing on that trail.
Yeah, so like a lot of people, you know, a few years ago, sorry, my cat's going to probably be making a few cameos here.
He's totally.
And this was actually late 2019. So it kind of worked out well with everything that happened in 2020 to kind of have a little bit of an eye and an ear and a brain for kind of what's going on out there. I started listening to a lot of conspiracy podcasts, a lot of stuff like that, a lot of 9/11, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, when you start, you know, when your mind starts thinking in a different way, you watch stuff that, you know, even stuff you've seen your whole life, and then you see that there's just a little bit of something else going on there. And I really noticed it with like the Star Wars prequel movies, you know, the ones that came out like the late 90s, early 2000s. A lot of people really hated those. And they were, I thought they were okay. when they came out. But then when I watched them again, it really told this really cool story about this guy who was in the government. Surprise, surprise, surprise. A guy that was in government that manipulated, you know, basically millions of people into giving him power so that he would create like a safe and secure, he literally says that, a safe and secure society for them. And I'm like, huh, that sounds like a lot of hogwash we've heard over, you know, hundreds and thousands of years at this point, right? I mean, you can go back to World War II. They said, hey, we really need to get involved in this war. You can go back to the Vietnam War. Say, hey, we really need to get involved in this war. You can go back to 9/11. We really need to get involved in this war. And they manipulate a lot of events on the outset of it so that, you know, to rally people behind it. Because even, you know, going back to World War II with like the Pearl Harbor incident, before that, a lot of Americans didn't want to get involved. You know, but then Pearl Harbor happened, and, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, fishy stuff about how those circumstances all melded into this thing. And then sure enough, then we were, everybody who says, well, we need to get involved in this war, et cetera. The same thing happens in those prequel movies over and over again. There's these manipulated events that are used to stoke people's emotional response to society, to politics, to... Well, if we don't do X, then Y is going to happen. And sure enough, this guy's just been leading him on the whole time. He ends up becoming, obviously, everybody knows, if you know the story of Star Wars, he becomes the emperor of, you know, the universe at that point. Spoiler alert from like 1983. It was interesting when George Lucas went back and told those prequel movies, like how did we get to this? You know, everybody knows like the Empire, right? The Empire, Darth Vader, the Empire, the Death Star, all this really cool stuff and really totalitarian dictator, whatever you want to call it. But like to get to that point, everybody basically gave him the power to do that by believing all of his lies. So I kind of started thinking like, well, I think there's a lot of things that I could kind of parallel in the Star Wars universe, which is what's going on in our world. So I kind of went down that rabbit hole. And then that's led me up to, you know, the kind of what I'm working on now is, like you mentioned, talking about like, you know, the new age and things like that. And, you know, I'm a born again believer. I'm a Christian. And I've recently started to understand that there's a lot of, you know, like you said, like these things work on multiple levels, you know, right? Like when you're a kid, it's like a fun action movie, you know, and that's cool. Like the Force, everybody pretended they were a Jedi and pretended to like, oh, I'm pretending to open doors and things like that. But really, if you look underneath that, George Lucas is presenting like this kind of quasi one world type religion, right? Where like everything is connected and everybody can tap into this thing. It's a very mystical thing. And a lot of people sometimes separate that from our world because it's such a fantastical idea. But then as the more I dig into it, it's like, it's new age stuff. It's Buddhism. It's Hinduism. It's, you know, Christ consciousness. It's like all of this, you are your own God, you know, basically is how it boils down. So anyways, long story short, I kind of started out on the kind of the more like strictly kind of conspiracy, political kind of machinations. And now more recently, I'm talking about some of the new age type mystical stuff that's going on in the series.
That's really interesting because going back to what we said at the opening of the show, Star Wars flavored the future of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And so everything is basically, you know, in a lot of ways... inspired by, but sort of copycatting Star Wars. Star Wars laid the foundation for what space looks like and what other races might look like and how our interactions politically and militarily and all these different things might actually look. And so, you know, very much in the way that, like, if you look at Lord of the Rings and this world of goblins and elves and dwarves and such, they all draw from the same source. And so all sci-fi, for the most part now, draws from the same source that is shoulder to shoulder with Star Wars. Whether or not it's directly inspired by Star Wars, it's inspired by something that was inspired by it. So to have all of this new age stuff hidden in it, it very much feels like there was this, they did an excellent job of making this new age thing look so appealing and so sexy. Like you said, lightsaber fights, how many people have on the way into CVS opened the doors on their own, you know what I mean, with their force powers. It was, call it a job well done, the permeation of culture by Star Wars. matters. And very yeah. much in that same breath, the permeation of the new, what was the expression that you used? New age.
Yeah, right. And it's, I used to think a lot more in terms of, well, Star Wars was predictive programming for, you know, AI, robotics, all this type of stuff, which I think also, but I think all sci-fi kind of has that stuff going on as far as, you know, well, the rise of robotics, you know, that's one of the things. There's a clone army, there's a huge robot army. So there's some of that stuff baked into it, but you're right. Like there's also this other level of, hey, I think the force is cool. It's this mystical kind of religion, but it technically is a religion, and I think it slowly gets people, and you know, and some people have pushed back on me saying, you know, like stop thinking too much into this. It's just like a sci-fi series, but you know, you understand this is like once you can see different levels of stuff, like you can't go back. You know, and it's called, you know, programming, like television programming, this, you know, this channel. Why do they call it a TV channel? You know, all these words mean something, and a program, right? I'm just watching a program. Yeah, you're being programmed, you know, and the question that I kind of go back and forth on is, well, are a lot of these creators doing it intentionally? Or is it just kind of the power of Satan at work through demonic forces, whatever? Is it just kind of subvertly influencing them? So I kind of go back and forth on that. If there's like, because there's a lot of people in stuff I'm sure you see out there, like you can tell directly, like a lot of these celebrities are just 100% influenced by Satan to do all these things that they're doing. Like there's no other way. But then stuff like Star Wars, it's so subtle. That it makes you wonder kind of what their true intentions were, especially someone like George Lucas, who's someone I respect. He was a brilliant filmmaker. He created this humongous, crazy universe. And like you said, they all kind of draw all the fantasy stuff draws from like this well of like, you know, Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology, you know, ancient Roman society. All this stuff goes way, way back. That's why everybody, when they first see Star Wars, they're, even if you've never seen it before, like there's something kind of familiar about this story. And it's because it's that philosopher Joseph Campbell. It's kind of his theory he put out there many years ago, who is, you know, he's very into the new age and like self-discovery and all that stuff. But he broke down this thing called the hero's journey, which is like every story, you know, and like some of his mystical, like new age stuff, I really don't buy him, but I appreciate him from the standpoint of, he basically said all these stories have the same format, right? There's a hero, he goes on a journey, he meets like a mystical elder that helps him out, there's like some talismans or some, you know, lightsaber or sword or magic thing, like even like Legend of Zelda, like, hey, here's the sword to go on your way. There's always, they meet that kind of person, they meet like a, there's like a princess involved, there's like ups and downs, and he really broke that down, and George Lucas was heavily influenced by that, which is why the story seems so familiar to a lot of people. But then like you said, like, you know, when you look at this a lot deeper, this concept of the force is very influenced by mostly Buddhism and Hinduism. Lucas said that, like, he straight out said that he wanted to amalgamate all religions, all religious concepts into one universal idea. I'm like, huh, where have I heard that before? In the book of Revelation, yeah. You know? So, but it's done in like a fun way. Ha ha ha. It's just kind of a fun little thing that we're doing here. But it's at its core, it's the whole occultic black magic versus white magic concept, where they're both just using this force thing. They're just bending it to their own will. And the force is like it's a neutral. At the core of Star Wars, there's no God. It's kind of the biggest thing about it. There's no God. This force, this impersonal thing, is God. And whoever can manipulate it however they want, there's no really, I mean, they say like this is the dark side and light side, but there's really no technically like right and wrong. They both think that they're doing the right thing, and they can just push and pull this kind of spectrum of power back and forth over time. And it's a very like Hinduistic concept about, you know, there's no right or wrong. It's just the search of knowledge. The only failure is like being ignorant to what the knowledge is, you know, and that's the very Gnostic thing. Like, we just need to search for more and more and more knowledge and more knowledge and more knowledge. And I read a Bible verse recently which said, like, you know, in some cases, just the search for more and more and more knowledge, you never really get there, right? But they teach that the more knowledge you learn, the more enlightened of a being you can be, then you can become an ascended master, right? I mean, you see that in Star Wars. They die, they become these ethereal ascended beings. They've transported out of this life into another. And it's like, man, when you start breaking down those concepts, you're like, man, there's all just New Age stuff thrown throughout this. And it's, and you know, I will admit, it's a fun story. I'm always gonna love it. It's a fun story, you know, but I think people need to be aware of some of these concepts, albeit they seem fantastical. There's millions of people that actually believe this kind of stuff, you know, throughout our world right now. So it's a little bit crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it you're right. It is awesome. You know, and it's hard to kind of separate yourself, because I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings. I love that realm. I'm going to play, you know, if a new Skyrim comes out, I'm going to play it. It's just what it is. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of the things that I'm interested in. But I do have to separate it, because I recognize that there is a lot of this, like you said, there is no God. There's this trust in a mystic force, whether it's Magicka or something. It's the same stuff over all the different spheres, from Lord of the Rings all the way to Star Wars. It's just given a different name. And it's funny, because I see this trend a lot of people that tend to be very much into Star Wars are often atheists themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they think that, oftentimes it's the most scathing of them who will laugh in the face of somebody who believes in God, won't consider what they do a religious worship, right? But it very much is, especially when it comes to the iconography, the you know, emotion that it evokes in a person to start talking about it, or when you're really immersed in the lore of it. You know, some people are as good at, you know, reciting the world of Star Wars as they are at, you know, in comparison to like a biblical scholar. And it becomes a point, or the question, I think, becomes, just because you say that it's not a type of religious worship, at what point does the amount of time and dedication toward it become the equivalency?
100%. It's you're making it an idol. You're making it this idol in your life, right? Like, you know, you can see all this stuff behind me, and I go back and forth on this every day. And, you know, God is really putting it on my heart. Like, you need to not worship this stuff. And some people think that, well, I'm not coming down here and bowing down. Oh, hail Yoda! Like, that's not what it is. It's like you mentioned, it's the time you spend. And, you know, I kind of fell into exactly what you said there. For many, many years, my whole life, I know more about Star Wars than the Bible, you know, and I really want to, God has put that in my heart. Like, you need to change that. You really need to, because like for a while, it's like, well, I could mention a Star Wars reference about anything that happens in anybody's life. Like, well, what who cares? Like, how is that going to really help in the grand scheme? How is that going to get somebody to possibly, you know, believe in the God of the Bible by you reciting a Star Wars line? Like, that doesn't matter. And also, like, you're damn near approaching 40, dude. Like, you got to kind of get it together every now and then. So yeah, a lot of things become idols in people's lives, and it's all about discernment. It's all about, you know, how you spend your time. You know, like you said, you can enjoy Lord of the Rings, you can enjoy Star Wars, you can enjoy video games, what have you. But if it becomes like the controlling source in your life, then you really need to stop and take a step back and think, well, is this really how I should be living my life? And you know, a lot of the stuff I have back here, I'm probably gonna, you know, give it away to like my kids or like my niece and nephew or whatever, just because what good does it do me having this stuff sitting on a shelf? Yeah, it's kind of cool to look at, but you know, a lot of it is, you know, toys, and I want, you know, kids should be playing with toys. And like, that's kind of a whole other argument, you know, that, you know, there's a lot of collectors and stuff, but it's all about what is the overwhelming factor in your life. Like, I love playing music and stuff, right? Music can become an idol in your life. You know, people that you know, there's a lot of people that like love to exercise a lot of that stuff. And that's an amazingly great thing. But for, there's some people that that can become in their life that just kind of overpowers every facet of it. It can be something healthy that overpowers your life. And that's actually like a new age concept too. Like, you know, one of the, you know, yoga, right? That's a very new age type concept. It's about kind of like yoking to these other spirits, but also a lot of those, the concepts within it aren't necessarily evil. In like the new age is about, you know, eating healthy and all this kind of stuff. All those things are great. But, you know, like for me as a Christian, if there's all these things that are drawing me away from God into other things, then it becomes an idol. It could be the most perfect thing in the world to do, perfectly health-wise or whatever. But if you're making it more about yourself or this or that, then it becomes an idol and something to be cautious about for sure.
Yeah, I think that I empathize very much with what you were saying before about knowing so much about Star Wars. I think the issue becomes when your aim is no longer God and your aim becomes this thing. So that could be anything, like you said. I had a very similar experience where, and I think that this is something that that applies to you, is that I often say I came to Christ like through the back door, and the back door was like paranormal occultic stuff, and you know that is where I spent a lot of my time and energy: conspiracy theories, occultism, paranormal, supernatural. And now I still have a relationship with those things, but I look at them through a totally different lens. I look at them through the context of God and Christ being real, and no longer through the lens of like just focusing on this, you know? So in other words, all the stuff that you have behind you has an entirely different meaning for you now, because right. The context through which you see it is changed enormously. And I think that you can have the same exact collection and look at it two different ways. One is the obsession over the collection, and two is almost this like little laugh at what it used to mean to you and what right. You now know that it actually means. And then to go even a step further, you've dedicated your time to explaining to people the sort of the pitfalls and more the details of what this all actually means. So right. I'd like to get into that. What are some of the more compelling, before we get into the new age stuff, maybe it's best to backtrack and go a little bit towards the political stuff. You said back in 2019, right? We all had suddenly a lot of time on our hands. I went through a very similar thing. I started a different show. I no longer do that show. I'm much happier doing this one, but we all had this like, what do we do? And it's cool because it did give a lot of people some clarity. It sounds like it gave you some clarity. You were able to look at some of the things that you had spent a lot of time looking at, but suddenly through a different lens. And so what are some of the bigger things that you saw were, you know, because there has to be big things and there has to be a few of them before you're like, okay, there's something going on here. And then you start to connect all the little details and it paints a much more interesting photo or picture. But in the beginning, it's the broad strokes that start to outline everything. What were some of those broad strokes for you?
Sure. Yeah. One of the biggest ones was the concept of like a useful idiot. You know, this is something that, you know, in our world, we see it all the time, right? All these celebrities are making these videos where they basically look like hostages, like, I stand for this current thing. Thank you. Please donate to this charity. And I noticed this kind of concept in the Star Wars prequel movies, that when this emperor, when he was rising to power, he had all of these like business and political and economic leaders called, I think it was called the Trade Federation, backing him. You know, they backed him financially. They backed him, even creating like proxy wars on his behalf and whatnot. All because he had promised them, you know, listen, when I come to power, you guys are going to be the ones that are going to be my secondhand men, right? Like we're gonna rule the galaxy. We can have whatever we want. It's gonna be great. Well, it turns out at the end of that three-movie run, he turns around and his newly christened Darth Vader, he's like, go wipe those guys out. I don't need them anymore. You know, and he sends Darth Vader and kills all these guys. And all these guys are like, what? We thought there was going to be peace. You know, and that's what happens in pretty much every kind of communistic or totalitarian or however you want to phrase it, whatever correct wording, all these societies, there's all these people that are, you know, standing for the standing for the current thing in this and that, thinking that they're going to have good standing. And in the end, the people that they're backing really don't care at all. You know, they're going to be the first people that are disposable because they know too much, right? You know, they know too much about how the sausage is made. So when I saw that, I started noticing that in our world, whether it's, you know, the rise of Nazi Germany or some of the people that were helping Hitler out along the way, kind of wiped them out. A lot of other things throughout history. That was one of the biggest things I noticed. And then the other big thing too was when you talk about leaders, presidents, whatever, when they harness like emergency powers. In one of the prequel movies, they literally are, they put this Military Creation Act in front of like the galactic like Senate. And like in a Star Wars movie, it seems so absurd, like all these like senators and all this kind of stuff. But basically he said, listen, you guys need to grant me emergency powers because there's too much bureaucracy. We need to create this army to fight this external threat, right? There's always a threat. There's always a threat out there, you know, which I guess rabbit trail leads me to one of my favorite quotes ever from Star Wars, actually in the novel George Lucas wrote to the companion for the original book. He wrote a book for the original movie. He wrote about how this republic deteriorated, and he basically said that like a tree rotting from within, that's what happened to this society. It wasn't any external threat. It was coming from inside, you know, so they didn't see the problems coming from inside, and it exploded them. So, anyways, he tells everybody, we got to fight this external threat. The people aren't voting for it. The senators aren't voting for it. If you grant me emergency powers as your chancellor, I will just make some stuff happen. And it's not for my own glory. It's for the good of the republic that we can put some bureaucracy to the side. I can just get some of these laws passed out of the way. And then once we're over this threat, then I will give those emergency powers back. Right. Like,
very familiar.
Right. It's almost like, you know, the Terrorism Emergency Act that was enacted after 9/11, which was kept in effect for like 20 some years. Just like, we're still in a state of emergency about this, right? You still got to take your shoes off when you go to the airport with your kids.
I just got back from the airport and I was thinking the same thing, that I had to take my shoes off. And then I was also, I ended up flying on 9/11. I just came back from New Orleans, and we're sitting, we're still in vacation mode. So as we're sitting at the airport, I have to, even though it's very early in the morning, order a Bloody Mary. And as I'm waiting for the bartender to bring me my Bloody Mary, I'm sat and looking at the TV and they're talking about 9/11. And I go, today's 9/11? Holy crap. And yeah, here we are all these years later. What is it? 22 years later. And the Patriot Act is still in full swing. And yeah, it's funny because, you know, how many terrorists have we caught? Not very many. How many American citizens has it been leveraged against? Quite a few, actually. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's like the movie is echoing those sentiments of a government that seizes power for the good of the people and promises to give it back. And yes, we're on the tail end of another one of those seizures of power and you know, suspension of rights and people think that they're going to give them back. But even Star Wars will tell you, no, they don't give those things back.
No, and the other thing that the franchise does too, it shows that the government sometimes will end that emergency, but they will start another one. You know, right? Like 2020, probably there was no terrorist threat anymore, but now we have this new threat, this thing that's just out there. You know, be careful.
See this one,
right? You can't see it. You know, it's just like an invisible gas. Like, don't go outside without a rag over your face. Everybody's gonna die. So they will just swap that emergency out for something else. You know, it's a big concept that, you know, Orwell talked about in 1984, where this society of people, they said, well, listen, we're at war with this East Asia country. So everybody, you need to constantly be scared about war with this East Asia company country. But then they would say, well, no, we're not really at war with them. We're actually at war with these people. Like, you don't believe anything about that. Now we're fighting this threat over here. And it just shows people are so indoctrinated just to believe what the news is telling them. They will just kind of continue to go along with whatever that next threat is. In Star Wars, the threat was, we talked a little bit about, there's this big like civil war going on. The civil war ends, but then they say, well, listen, the civil war is over, but now all these like Jedi who are part of our government, like these Jedi are actually corrupt. We need to take them out. So then the people turn on those people, right? So they just swap the threat to something else, and then sure enough, he's turned this thing into an empire. So it's just that constant swap out of what our thing is. Are we mad about Russia today, or are we mad about Trump, or are we mad about diseases? Or it's just, you know, we're not upset about all these people that died in this thing. Where was it, Morocco? Nobody's really upset about that. Nobody's changing their profile pictures like, we stand for Morocco. You know, nobody cares about you know, what's going on in Hawaii, unless the government tells us that we need to, you know, which is hilariously absurd on how people are still in this day and age affixed to that kind of legacy media. You know, thank God, I know for all its flaws, you know, social media like Twitter and other places, you know, like we've been able to connect with a lot of other kind of people that are willing to kind of think a little bit differently. So, you know, it sounds weird to say, you know, thank God for giving us some of these outlets over the past few years to connect with a lot of people and really dive down a lot of a rabbit holes and trying to really understand what's going on. Yeah, some rabbit holes we go down are, you know, probably dumb in the end, but you know, it's part of the process, right? It's trying to get to an understanding of things going on in our world. So yeah, those are the biggest things I would say, like the useful idiot stuff, emergency powers, and then this like swap out of this is now the thing we need to be worried about. So everybody make sure you worry about that.
Yeah, it's impressive how well the government manufactures kind of fear campaigns and anger campaigns, to the extent that my son is 8 years old, and when we had come back from our flight on 9/11, he was happy to see us after school. And at some point, he's scribbling on some paper. And when I read it, it says, it's 9/11, be careful. And I go, what's this about? And he's like, oh, you got to be careful. It's 9/11. It's, you know, and he's kind of emphasizing that it's scary. And my son isn't watching CNN.
Yeah.
You know, but it's permeating yet another generation of this, like, you know, that's really what it was after 9/11. It was this permanent fear campaign. Remember they used to roll what color the terror threat was that day?
Yeah, like day. What am I not supposed to do? Yeah, in the I swear last year they rolled that back out again with all the other stuff, right? Like, here's the level of danger in your area. Like, oh, then you walk outside and you're talking to your neighbors like, what? There's nothing. Yeah, there's no
birds
problem
chirping.
Yeah, right. There's bird chirping, blue sky. There's no like nuclear fallout. Like, I'm just, and life just goes on.
Yeah, I was talking to my cousin earlier today, and he was I forget what we were talking about, but I was saying why might you want to? Damn, I forgot what it was. It was something that we suspected the government was doing. And we were speculating as to what ends. And the conclusion that I came to was that maybe if you can make if you can raise a population's overall sense of anxiety, even a few percentages, right? 1 or 2% over how many people are in America? 300 million people are in America?
30 to 40 million. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And so if you can do that successfully, just raise the baseline anxiety of 300 million people, just 1 or 2%, would that would that cause a significant uptick, a measurable uptick in, you know, armed robberies, you know, car crashes, could you elevate the overall level of chaos of an entire country? And if you did that in conjunction with a bunch of other things that would, you know, generally destabilize a place, you know, whether it's economical stresses or this and that, you know, fluoride in the drinking water for whatever that really counts for. Could you just slowly begin to redline an entire society? And sometimes I feel like that's the point. The point is, you know, when we go, what about that lady on the plane that's pointing at the lizard man screaming that he's not real? Or, you know, what about this football player that was died and then was cloned and then came back? And then, you know, like all of these things, it's, it feels almost like a constant inundation, psyop to just get you. Oh, I remember what it was. There's a date that's coming up, September 23rd or something like that.
Yeah, I've seen everybody posting about that, but I don't really understand what the context is behind that.
I think all I've seen, and I could be misrepresenting this, but the idea is that there was always these nods to 9/11, right? Cultural nods. So in pop culture, there's all these references before 9/11 ever happens to, like, you know, like The Simpsons, right? It's like there's a magazine in the background with 9 and 11 and the Twin Towers blowing up or something like that. Well, people have found a tremendous body of evidence for this date across pop culture, and it's 9/23 all the time. And so to me, it feels very much like a bunch of other things that have never come to pass, a bunch of dates that were going to happen for one reason or another that ended up not happening. And so I always kind of look at things like, if it wasn't, if there was an angle, what might the angle be? And I said, well, maybe you could be, you could benefit from having people on the edge of their seats, get them on the edge of their seats every once in a while, every once in a while, throw them a date. And if you can get a few hundred thousand people in the country to go, oh, the date is here comes the 23rd. You know, like, what does that do? Does that raise the overall anxiety of a culture? And then, you know, I started speculating as to all these other things, but I don't know what that is, what the 9/23 thing is. I imagine it's going to come and pass and nothing's going to happen. But what I will say is, as a person who has been a conspiracy theorist for over 16 years now, I was on the lookout since 19 years old for, and this isn't my idea, this is actually thanks to Jesse Ventura, if anybody remembers Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. He interviewed a woman who claimed that one day a manufactured virus was going to be released from a lab and it was going to shut, you know, the world down at a pandemic level, and that it really wasn't the virus that was going to be the worst. It was the vaccine that was going to be bad. And so I always was looking out for this thing. So when West Nile came, I was like, oh, shit. Maybe not West Nile. That might have been a little bit early. But I know when swine flu came, I was like, oh, shit. And then when avian bird flu came, I was like, oh, shit. And then when Ebola came, I was like, oh, shit. And then by the time COVID finally came, I was like, this isn't going to be shit. And then the whole thing rolls out. So with our luck, then, yeah, 9/23, something terrible is going to happen. The fake alien invasion or something like that is going to commence, and we're all going to be like, God damn it. And I'm going to just feel just thwarted again that I spent all these years researching stuff and then wasn't able to call it, because that's how my track record is with COVID right now. I should have seen that. I should have been able to call it. And instead, I spent the first month being like, this ain't shit.
Yeah, and I totally understand what you're saying about, like, just like the collective kind of cultural anxiety, because, you know, you mentioned about, like, car crashes. This was something I was going to bring up. I have never seen, you know, I'm almost 40 years old. I've been driving for, you know, 24, 25 years at this point. I've never seen such terrible driving in my entire life as I've seen in the past, like, year or 2 years. And obviously part of it's like the rise of smartphones, everybody's looking at the phone, but, like, there's just something, like, people's brain, like you mentioned about the anxiety of all this stuff, like a lot of people's brains are just, like, broken and just, like, basic
too divided.
Yeah. There's so many things going on, and just the normal stuff that we always thought wouldn't necessarily be a problem. You know, I see people, like, swerving across, like, five lanes of traffic, like it's nothing, in just, like, a suburb area, not even on the highway. I'm like, what is really going on here? And it's, yeah, you're right. They want us to stay in a state of fear. And you know, ultimately, you know, like as a Christian, I believe that it's because they want to people to turn away from God. They want people to trust in them as
the
their
government.
The government as their savior, right? They're the ones with the vaccines. They're the ones with all the tools to keep you safe, right? They're the ones that will keep you locked down in your house for a year. They're the ones who can send you free virtual reality equipment, so you don't have to go out into that scary world anymore, right? You can just sit there and, you know, in your basement, and you can be playing golf on the other side of the world. It's great. You know, it's this idea of staying in fear. We are the ones that can help you. Nothing else can help you besides us. And it's really sad to see how people have let that affect them. And it's permeable in so many areas of life.
Yeah. Some of us are swallowing the toothpaste. It is really, it does feel like what do they call it? The quickening. It feels like things are ramping up more and more every day. And we're just constantly coming to a crescendo that's never actually happening. Just this massive groundswell, you know, very much like our economic bubble that's supposed to have collapsed years ago and hasn't. I wanted to ask you something, and maybe you don't know about this, and if you don't, we can go past it and into some of the more esoteric stuff in Star Wars. But there was a story, and I don't remember who the story, you know, what it stems from. I do know that it's similar to like the Aleister Crowley communicating with the entity Lamb, that there is some sort of lore behind our government communicating with something that looked like Yoda. Have you ever heard that?
I haven't. You know, I've seen some of the stuff about how there was this Yoda-like creature from this occultic book from like 100 years ago or so. I forget the guy's name. Might have been Levi or something like that. I've seen some of that stuff, but not too much. I wouldn't be surprised, really.
Yeah. All right, so why don't we hop into some of the more esoteric, new agey stuff and just other things that are compelling to you about the series as a whole?
Yeah, and like we talked about a lot, you know, in a lot of fantasy and like a lot of movies in general, and like the more you see this, it's just everywhere. One of the main concepts of pretty much every single movie is just believe in yourself. You need to believe in yourself. You need to recognize your potential. You need to find that thing inside of you. And once you bring that out, then everything is going to be great. And, you know, whether it's in Star Wars, you notice this kind of concept with, you know, with the Force, just think, just quiet your mind, just think, just focus and you can make things happen. You know, it's the very law of attraction kind of thing, right? Like just think happy thoughts and happy things are going to happen. That's all you need. That's all you need to do. And if it didn't happen, well, guess what? It's your fault because you didn't think hard enough. You know, like just think happier thoughts, happier. Come on, moron. Like, what are you doing? But also there's all these concepts of like, you can use good and dark, good and evil to accomplish something that's ultimately good. Like at the end of, you know, Return of the Jedi, as Luke Skywalker is fighting Darth Vader, he's really tapping into the dark side. He's like wailing on this guy, and he's pretty much close to turning to the dark side. But like, he basically defeated him by using evil to get him on the ground, you know? But then at the end of the day, he says, well, hold on. I don't want to go any farther with this, but that's one of those concepts. And you see it a lot also with a lot of probably like Japanese type cinema, like martial arts stuff. Like, you got like the inner dragon, right? You got to unleash that inner dragon. Well, what is a dragon? A dragon is like a serpent. What's a serpent? A serpent's like a snake. Where did we first see the snake? You know, in the garden, you know, tempting Eve and telling her he'll give her everything if she, you know, becomes her own god. You know, so that concept of like the dragon, the snake, you see that a lot in all kinds of movies. And definitely, you know, the snake concept is big in Hinduism. But ultimately,
you know,
that's
what sorry to interrupt, but I do want to say, just while I have it at the forefront of my mind, that reminds me very much of the Harry Potter thing. It's like Harry goes through the same thing, you know, and he even has like this. Very much where Luke has his dark arc and he's got all black on and everything. Harry goes through this like much darker phase. Even Voldemort himself is reminiscent of like a serpent. You know, he's got like the slits for nostrils instead of an actual nose. And Harry has to use like immense raw power to battle him. And so I couldn't help but have that image, you know, evoked in my mind when you were describing that. It is this thing that's told. You said the hero's journey, right? But even a little bit more layered than the hero's journey. It's like, geez, man, right? Frodo goes through the same thing. Frodo becomes like very dark towards the end and corrupted by the ring and, you know, has to battle it out with what's his name? The little goblin sucker.
Gollum. Yeah.
Gollum. Yeah. He gets like really into a heated and dark and, you know, it's no longer Frodo, the kind, naive character from the Shire. It's this much darker, corrupted version of Frodo who's, you know, in a very physical battle with this little creature. And man, it really, and look, what do we just name? Three of the most successful movie franchises, also like series too, right? It's not just like one film. In the history of cinema, and certainly, certainly in their respective realms of like wizardry and dwarves and crap and sci-fi futuristic stuff, the tip of the pyramid in their respective genres.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Man, and I mean, it makes you think like maybe I just need to write the exact same shit if I could just find a genre that hasn't had that happen yet. And just write the exact same thing, because it is. It's a regurgitation. Look, I'm not saying that to take away from it. Maybe there is just something that story speaks to within human beings, and it's why it's so effective at captivating us and affecting our culture on such a high level. It's that story. It's not Lord of the Rings. It's not Star Wars. It's not Harry Potter. It's something is beneath that. If you can push the surface level stuff off of it, at its core, there's something that is like, just intertwined with the path of human beings so much so. But it's a story, so you can't see it, and it disguises itself amongst all these different things. But it's been with us for a long time, and it's you know, unfortunately, it's being used to sway us towards what you were describing, this like believe in yourself. It's not like in Star Wars, like you said earlier, there is no god. It's balance. It's what yin and yang, right?
Yep.
It's Eastern Buddhism. It's all this stuff. There is no god. There's only you, and there's balance.
Yeah, and before I get back into Star Wars a little bit, I want to go back to what you were saying about those three franchises, right? Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, and Harry Potter. Of those three, I would say Lord of the Rings at its core probably has the most like moral story out of all three of those, because really, like, what I've always believed is like the ring is like is a symbol of like sin, right? It's like this thing, this sin that is, it shackles to you. It can get you. Yeah, it's a burden, right? But you know, sometimes it feels good, right? Sometimes it feels good to use this thing and to help you get out of trouble and this and that. But at the end of the day, that has to be cast away into the fire, right? That has to go. You know, you can't, and that's why you see Gollum. He's just basically like an addict for this thing. You know, it's just an addict for someone who just loves darkness and evil and all this stuff. So I think at the end of the day, I would say, you know, you put the wizard stuff aside, like, that at its core concept, I think, is a great moral story. Whereas, like you said, it's like Star Wars, it's just light and dark, white and black magic. And, you know, with this, some of the newer stuff out that, you know, not everybody is really into, but I'm still checking it out just to put some content out about this new show about this character, Ahsoka. She's not a Jedi. She's not an evil Sith. She's just this other thing, right? So she's like, well, I'll just draw on both of those things. I will draw on some good, some bad. I will just basically make my own path, you know? And, you know, you can probably draw some kind of, you know, feminism angle from that too, which I think they're going towards, which is like, that's a whole nother conversation. But it's also like, well, I'm just kind of taking a few little bits of all this stuff, and now this is me, right? This is who I am. Like look, you see people with all the bumper stickers, right? They got like the gay rights bumper sticker, the Ukraine bumper sticker, the vaccine bumper stickers. Like, this is like what my personality is. I'm just grabbing all these kind of things, and like this is who I am at the core of it, and that's my way. And she says a lot of times throughout the series, well, like, this is just my own personal personal journey, you know, and it's, you know, from, I obviously look at all this stuff from a biblical context, and, you know, Jesus says, no, like, there's one way, that, like, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. There's no, just everybody can do whatever they want. Like, you can be a Buddhist monk, or you can be just an immoral person, or believe this or that. And it all funnels through to the same heaven, right? Like, it's all good. It's like, no. The Bible, you know, makes it clear about how that path is. You know, and a lot of people don't like to hear that. And, you know, people are can make their own decisions around, but at the end of the day, they will have to stand before God and account for that. But yeah, all these stories, it's all just about self, and just like, I need to do something better for me, just because, you know, I mean, I was just watching, like, you know, like The Little Mermaid, right? I was just watching this with my daughter the other day, you know.
Which one, the new one or the old one?
The new one, which, you know, whatever, it was all right. It is what it is. It's just they bastardize all these stories, but it's even that, I'm like, I can't even sit there and watch something like that without realizing, like, well, it's this whole inverted world where she lives in this, like, heavenly society, but she wants to escape to go to where the humans are, and then the humans ultimately defeat evil. And I would say that's the other thing too. It's where it's about a lot of these movies, and not as much in Star Wars. I think there's some aspects of it, but definitely in things like Marvel and whatnot, they set this, like, godlike character that's always the villain. You know, it's the whole, like, Gnostic concept of, like, the god of this world is just evil and hates humanity, and all of the people, especially, like, in the Avengers, it's very clear. All the Avengers team up and they take out that godly person, right? Or that evil, they call that evil person, right? But, like, it's all of humanity that can ultimately defeat evil on their own. No need for God, no need for the Bible, no need for believing in Jesus Christ. It's we can do that. And people say, like, well, but that religion doesn't exist in that universe. Like, that, I'm like, it's besides the point. It's every single movie. When you see something happen one or two times, you can say maybe it's a coincidence. But when it's every single time, you know, there's something to it, right? They set up, like, this character that says they hate humanity, and they can create and at will. What was the guy's name from the Avengers?
Thanos,
right? At the snap of his finger, he can kill people, right? Like, they're totally trying to say, like, a God of the Bible type situation where he can just, at the snap of his fingers, he can kill half of humanity and when he wants to. Whereas the Bible tells us that, you know, no, God wants to draw people to him. You know, there is a penalty for sin, of course, but at his core, God has a nature of love within him that he wants to draw people towards him, but people ultimately can make their own decisions. And ultimately, you know, if you turn away from God, it's not because God is evil, it's because you're evil. And, you know, you see this script flipped in so many movies, and maybe you could even say that in Star Wars, right? Like the Death Star is maybe some, you know, proxy for God, that humanity is like, well, we need to go destroy that and form our own path and rebel, right? Rebellion. That's what the big thing in Star Wars, right? It's all about rebellion. Which, if you look at it on just like a purely, like, governmental level, like, if your government is corrupt, sure, like, there's nothing wrong with fighting back against that corrupt government. But if what they're trying to say is that government proxy is like God, and that humanity needs to stand up and you know, carve their own path out, well, then that's a different story altogether, you know?
Yeah, it does seem to be this constant feeding of, like, the spirit of rebellion. You know, those are some of the most appealing things to us. Some of the most successful films are all this feeding of the spirit of rebellion. And it is also, it's interesting how that message can seem so, we've gotten to the point, societally speaking, culturally speaking, that this message is seen as a positive one. But only when you start to, like, reverse engineer it do you realize this isn't. And it's the whole, like, all you need is you. Believe in yourself and you can accomplish it all. And don't, you know, it's the antithesis of seek Christ and seek a relationship with God. Because you have it all and you could do it all. And it is funny because it's such a, even saying it, I'm like, man, that it sounds like a positive message. But have we just been socially engineered to the point where we've internalized it?
Yeah,
it really is. It feels positive at its core.
Yeah, and it all spans, like, from what I've noticed in kind of this current past, you know, however many decades. It's really like in the Cultural Revolution of like the 60s, where it was like we need to kind of turn away from all of these traditional types of religion. I mean, like, look at like the Beatles, right? I used to love the Beatles, but look at the Beatles, like the last half of their career, it was just all like occult symbolism, all psychedelic drugs, all, you know, self-realization, you know, how to save yourself from like the song about like how to save yourself from the void, like all of this stuff that they learned from all of these, you know, Hindu teachers in India. And they kind of brought that into their music because everybody loved the Beatles, but they totally did a bait and switch on everybody, you know, a few years into their career, where instead of just doing these pop, like she loves you, like instead of doing those poppy songs, now they're talking about LSD. They're talking about, you know, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, you know, is the concept of one of their songs,
yeah,
and all this stuff. But like everybody like loves the Beatles. So they will go along with that. And even, I think they're one of the biggest catalysts of bringing in this new age stuff into our culture, because George Lucas and, you know, every celebrity, every musician over the past 50 years, the Beatles are one of their cultural influences. Every mm-hmm. single person says it, where, I mean, it kind of loses its meaning when everybody says it, but they're like,
yeah, it's like a non-statement.
Yeah, basically. But it's like when you actually break it in and people don't think anything ever, like, oh, it's just the Beatles, just this little pop band from the 60s. Like, what's the big deal? No. Like we're saying, like, there's all these stuff on the surface, but you look beneath, they were just so occultic and so satanic at their core. But if you say that to just a normal person on the street, they'd be like, get the hell out of here, dude. Like, what are you talking about?
Bell bottoms and mustaches, dude. Well, that, right. It's funny because it's the same thing, dude. The Beatles are the Star Wars of the music industry, you know, where all of these future artists, they all draw from that well. And everything started, like you said, going south. Well, not south. I mean, they had obviously unbelievable, the most successful careers that you could ever have as far as music icons go. But it definitely did pivot and take a really weird turn once they started getting involved with LSD and shit like that. And this is where things get weird. This brings me back to an episode that I just did with my buddy Paul of Understanding Conspiracies. We did an episode that was all about the Nephilim, the biblical Nephilim, and their connection to the modern visage of the clown. And one of the things that we talked about was that relationship between the Nephilim and the clowns being, you know, designed after them, and how that relates to the entities that people see when they do dimethyltryptamine. They will commune with these jester-like entities. And Paul was saying something really interesting, where he was saying that the realm that people go to when they do a psychedelic like dimethyltryptamine is essentially like having a carpet. And on the top of the carpet, you have this beautiful tapestry, right? All these designs and fabric and all this stuff. On the underside, you have the crossing weaves of thread and glue, and essentially that the top is our waking existence, and the thread and glue is this dimension. It's just the underside of our dimension, and people will often go on these experiences, and it's not just unique to dimethyltryptamine, right? We're all familiar with this idea that, like, people throughout the ages have done drugs and come back with profound ideas, but who commune these ideas to them? Right? Where are these ideas coming from? So when you have, you know, especially in the way of the Beatles, we're talking the same people that had Aleister Crowley on the cover of, yep, of one of their albums,
yep,
The Wickedest Man Alive, who was as occult as anyone ever has been. He's one of the faces that people associate when you think of like the dark occult arts. Aleister Crowley's right there. And so these folks, They go through all this stuff, right? They go through all of these psychedelic experiences, and then they come back and they start engineering culture. Well, where do they get these ideas to engineer culture? You know, if you do DMT, you have an experience that's vivid enough that you can tell people where you got the ideas. And it's these weird jester beings or these machine elves. They'll say often machine elves, but they will commune with something, and the something will express to them just epiphanous idea after epiphanous idea. And so these fucking people, they go and they do all these drugs and they come back and they swing culture in such a massive way. And they set the tone forever after for the rest of the music industry. And now the music industry is riddled with all of that, you know, Illuminati symbolism, satanic symbolism, this and that. It's everywhere. You cannot separate that from the music industry. And hip hop is suffering, I would say, the most for it right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we had bands in the 80s and everything, Slayer and stuff. And yeah, they were satanic about it. But I don't know what it is. Something about the way that the hip hop industry has embraced it is so much more nefarious, because it's like it was never. Hip hop wasn't that in the beginning, whereas a lot of metal bands, they just, that's how they came out. They were that. They were upfront and forward about it. And I think a lot of those metal bands were gimmicky. And then some of them were, obviously the messaging in its total was bad, and it permeated the culture in a terrible way. But like, hip hop is so much more subversive with it. And so much, I don't know. It's just, it's the same thing, but it feels grosser. And I don't know why it is, but
yeah. And I will say, you know, even like the beat, like the beats themselves of like modern hip hop music, it's very like, it sounds evil. If you just isolate like the beat itself, it's like, we're like, you know, back in the day, you know, you listen to like Tupac or Biggie or even, you know, Dr. Dre, Eminem, stuff like that. It had like a really poppy, like fun sounding beat to it. You know, it was fun, but it's got really dark, and all the music videos very dark. To my like you said, they're not even hiding it anymore. You don't even have to go like trying to decode what these frames are, what they're doing with their eye or this. Or that. It's just everything is there. There's like too much to decode now, because
I was gonna do a series where I was gonna like break down music videos. But if we went back to the old ones, you might be able to be like, now you see this statue over here, what that statue actually represents. But here it would be like, and here they are twerking on the devil. Okay. And now she's twerking on the devil, as you can see. Like, it really wouldn't be. There'd be no allusion to it.
Right. But you make a good point that like at a certain point it wasn't that, and then it became this. So people who were into hip hop like this whole time, like a lot of them, if they're still into it, like they probably think, well, it's a little weird, but maybe it's just the new style, right? It's just a new kind of thing, right? It's just like how people like, it's normal for us to all do yoga at church. Like, what's the big deal? That's just what people do nowadays. Like, no, just because it's popular and that's the new thing doesn't mean it's good. And it's, you know, there's this concept that I need to like put a bunch of examples together because this happens so often. I call it like the Netflix season 3 conspiracy. How in all these Netflix shows, you know, they pull you in, and I don't even watch any of them anymore because they're all just garbage. But they pull you in with a compelling story and it's great. But by season 3 or 2 or 3 or 4, whatever, they flip it on you. You know, they flip it on you. So like the white guy is now the villain, right? He was the hero, but now he's the villain. Now he's probably a rapist also. He probably hates women. Somebody has turned gay, right? Now they're the new hero. So they do this stuff, and when it happens once or twice, okay, whatever. But then I started noticing it over and over and over again. And, you know, a lot of people don't catch it, and they just think, well, yeah, it's okay that all this stuff is in all our media. It's just how society is now. It's like, well, society right now is garbage. You know, I heard a really good analogy about that, just kind of about culture. Is like, you know, about how, like, as Christians, like, should we still be interacting with the culture? Should we still be pulling all this stuff in culture? And, you know, it definitely takes, you know, a lot of, you know, God's discernment to do that. But the concept he made, metaphor he made was like, well, you can reach into a garbage can 10 times, and one of those times you may pull out something that was edible. But does that mean it's okay to eat out of the garbage? No. You know, just because you pulled a piece of an apple that wasn't moldy and ate it out of the trash can, that doesn't make everything else that's in there okay too. So it really takes a lot of discernment. But, you know, you're right with, I think, going back to the hip-hop example, things have just degenerated to such a certain extent. Like I think we're probably just past the generation that it's even marketed for. But I just don't understand what they're trying to do to that. Like, why is it compelling? But I think, like we said, it's these hypnotic beats. It's almost there's just a lot of repetition. I notice with a lot of repetitious repeating words. And that's a big thing in like New Age. That's a big thing in like Hinduism and yoga. It's like repeating these mantras over and over and over and over and over again. And it's meant to put you in a trance-like state so that you can be, I don't want to get too woo-woo about it, but like it opens you up. It's not necessarily like all these demons are like, but it opens you up to a spirit-like world where bad stuff can affect you. However that looks like, I can't necessarily explain it, but I think you know what I mean. You're putting yourself in a trance-like state. Even like yoga, like the idea is like to slow down everything, like stop everything. Like, why do you want to stop it? Like, what else? What do you want to rush in there and take control of?
What are you trying to do, dude? We're just fine. Why do we need? I don't understand this whole like. Look, maybe there's something to it, but like, that doesn't sound appealing to me, is to like reach this state of nirvana. I don't want to do that. I don't want to sit cross-legged and be quiet for a long time. I'm grateful that was never appealing to me. But you know what's funny is I think it's got something to do with the drums. Now, hear me out, okay? You become almost in a hypnotic state, right? That's kind of what we're referring to, right? Is these things, they put you in a trance, they hypnotize you. And so the state of mind that you're in when you're hypnotized is it precedes whatever the hypnotist is programming. So you first need to be in a trance-like state in order to be programmed. And I was watching They Clone Tyrone, which is actually a really good Netflix movie. It's with Jamie Foxx, and honestly, dude, it was a blast. Like I loved watching it.
Yeah,
it was
hilarious.
It was, yeah, it was really well thought out. The writing was great, the dialogue was great, and the concept, like the story behind it, was very cool. I think you'd really get a kick out of it. And one of the things they touched on was how they're like entrapping the black community with hip hop music. So they were able to take like a club full of people, play aggressive music, and then everybody became hyper aggressive. And then they played like, you know, slow, sexy music, and everybody came kind of romantic and sexy. And so, you know, they were showing how that works. But I was just in New Orleans. And one of the things that I noticed because I become existential like all the time, if you put me in a massive crowd of people, I zoom out and I observe like everything. I can't have a good time. I was just at a Coheed and Cambria concert and everybody's jumping around, and I never go to live music, but I went because, you know, we're in New Orleans. I wanted to have a cool vacation with my wife. And as everybody's like throwing the, you know, devil horns in the air and they're jumping up and down, I'm looking at them going like, this is wild, isn't it? Like they've all entered the trance. The trance state where they are now programmable. They're getting rid of the individual and becoming part of like this ever moving mob that's synchronized with the music. And also, while I'm walking down the streets of Bourbon Street and I'm looking around in horror and disgust at all the twerking and just the debauchery and the smells of human feces and hot urine and just everything, there's vomit. It was hell. Like I was looking around like, this is incredible. I felt like it was like a Dante's Inferno. Like this is one of the levels of hell. And what I noticed was there was children who would be playing the drums on buckets, or you'd pass by a bar. They all have their doors wide open, and there's a bar every three doors, and the music is blasting out of it. And what you'll see is people walking normally, and then they'll pass by the drums, and all of a sudden it'll change the way they walk, and they'll stop walking and they'll start dancing, and then they'll keep walking again, and then they'll pass the next place, and the next place will hit them, and something about them seemed different. Like every time, it was like they were, especially because they were all screwed up, they were all drunk, so everybody is walking around in this super susceptible state, and from one door to the next they're influenced, because they're like programmable. In this moment, they're influenced by every single bar's music, every single drummer boy's music that they pass by. And I like dancing. Like I like dancing with my wife and stuff. But like, you know, I was never like, I'm not one of those people that like, I just can't, you know, resist the rhythm, dude. Like I have to. So I look at people that do that and I'm like, what the hell is that, man? And I just think like there is something about music. Wasn't Satan like the, or Lucifer was the angel of music, or that was one of the things that he resided over.
Yeah. And you know, in some modern, I will say the one crazy thing is in some of the more modern versions of the Bible, they've removed that inference to Lucifer being, you know, like the basic, I don't want to say like the grand musician, but like as far as, you know, being in charge of music, however that worked out, I don't remember the exact reference, but yeah, that was in one of the prophetic books, I believe Isaiah or Ezekiel, where it talked about that. And, you know, he was big. He was one of the big musical people, musical angels up in heaven. And then he lost that. But like I said, and they've scrubbed some of that out of some more really modern translations, which is like, they're almost trying to, get people to not make that comparison, right? Because there's a lot of even modern queer Christian worship music that I would say is no different than anything else that you mentioned there. So yeah, music. I love music. You know, music is amazing. I play guitar, I play drums, I play keyboard. I love playing all this kind of music. But you're right. Sometimes you step back and look like, man, it really has this effect to like turn people into zombies. And, you know, one of my big kind of, I would say probably kind of obsessions, and I don't know why, it's really dorky, but like, I'm really big into like Phil Collins. Okay. So,
what, dude, are you kidding? Yo, Phil Collins is the shit.
He's amazing. And like in the 80s, he was like, you know, people saw him as like a god. I was watching a concert from like 1985, crowd of, I believe it was like 500,000 people. Just when he would say to raise your arm, do this, he would say to raise your arm, do that. I'm like, man, like I think this is cool, and I love the music and everything, but also it's like the people that are in charge of it, they're getting off on that ego boost of like, if I move my hand, people will talk. If I put it down, they will stop. Like, yeah. and they get that's why so many these big leaders, politicians, musicians, singers, they get so out of their mind. Even like, you know, go back to like Elvis. He's another one. Like they know that the control they have over people is massive. So they see themselves kind of as that god. And, you know, people just eat it up. And, you know, we're not saying there's anything wrong with listening to music or whatever, but it's like anything.
Just observations.
It's observations. If that's what is affecting you deeply, then there's, you know, something you need to think about a little bit.
Yeah, I think about often how we have a mechanism within us that allows us to be hypnotized. And like you said, these people on stage, right? Like I just saw these two bands playing, and one of them in the beginning, it wasn't the guys from Coheed and Cambria, but it was these other guys. I think they were called Death Heaven, real nice name. And they are like the main singer is flailing his arms around like he's in like a conductor for an orchestra. And it's just so like he is doing something that otherwise without music, you'd be like, this dude is absolutely insane. You got to cross the street if you see this guy, like get on the other. Right. No, double back and leave. Go down another street if you see this guy. But because the music is there and he's in front of a crowd, he's doing all this. And you imagine the sense of grandeur you must have in that moment. What room is there for God in your mind when you are commanding a sea of people and, you know, just loving every second of it? You have to imagine like, yeah, there is, some of these people are certainly getting lost in that. They don't have room for God in their minds. Yeah. And I think the other thing too is that it leaves me with this really disturbing realization that like, I'm glad that I don't have it. I love music too. Certainly not to the extent I love music, but I have to admit I am weird. Like I don't listen to music. I don't I'll listen to like stuff that I sort of grew up on. I don't listen to a lot of new stuff. I don't consume albums or anything like that. I might play like one or two songs to death because I'm just a psycho like that. Like I'll play a song on repeat. My wife is like, can you please stop? Like it was a good song 15 replays ago. It's no longer a good song. Like and I don't know why I do that. But I'm glad though that I don't have that mechanism, because truthfully, whenever I go to a place that has, you know, music going on and I see people, like, man, my relationship with even with dancing is so strange, because like my wife is Spanish and I come from a Spanish family and they're always dancing and I'll dance, but it's very much like putting a face on.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm enjoying it and I am having a good time, but like this is not something that I would ever do had it not been for the pressures of, you know, okay, well, that's what we're doing here right now. Like, you're not going to catch me doing it around my house. And because to me, it feels like I'm being hijacked by a thing. And I don't like that. I don't like being told what to do, dude. You know, I don't like when music tells me what to do. I don't even like when people have like this really high level of celebrity worship really disturbs me. It's predominantly women that will have the experience of like celebrity tabloid kind of gossip things where they're going to really care about who so-and-so is marrying. But I was just talking to somebody about this. It might've been my wife, where I was saying, if you asked me like who I would want to meet, like what celebrity would you want to, like, dude, I don't know. What do I even have to offer these people? What would we talk about? Honestly, you know, the conversation would go something like, hey, I really enjoy your work. I love this thing that you did. It's super awesome. Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, man. You're great.
And that's it. Right. It's like that Chris Farley skit for Saturday Night Live. Like, remember Paul McCartney? Remember when you were in the Beatles? That was awesome. Like what else do you got? Like that's it. They're like, oh, I've heard this a million times. Great. Another wacko. You know, it's like, but you're right. This celebrity thing where we basically, very new age concept as well, like, right, these are the ascended masters. These are the people that these are the demigods. These are the people that we should look up to. And like, but like, why? Because they like, and if you think about it, like an actor, an actress, like their whole job is to lie and pretend that they're somebody else. They're lying. That's the whole thing. That's what acting is. It's a lie. You're seeing something on a screen that is not real. You know, it goes to that way back to like that Plato's allegory of the cave, people just sitting in a dark room, just seeing these things on the wall and they think that's reality. And like, that's all actors and actresses are. They're good at pretending to be other people, you know? And then like, then they come out with some political statement where, and everybody believes it. Like, they're also acting. This is also acting. It's no different. They probably don't even believe it. They're just saying it. But like we are, like you said, we're programmed, we're conditioned to put these people up as God, put these people as the idol that we should look out for. And it's all about humans are the end all be all of everything. There's no need for God. There's no need for really looking
into evolve and ascend.
Right. And that was the whole thing with like the 60s Cultural Revolution. They're saying, well, this other age has ended. This age of Aquarius is now here, I think, which is where you get like that new age concept, because they're saying this new age is here, and we can become gods. And ultimately, that's what it boils down to. And it goes way back to Genesis 3, and Satan said, you know, the snake says to Eve, like, you know, did God really say that you were going to die? It's all about just like, you know, this questioning of God, and like, you can really choose your own path. And that ties back to Star Wars, that ties back to music, that ties back to all this kind of stuff we've been talking about.
Yeah, I'm glad that one of the things that I'm good at, and it doesn't serve much of a purpose I suppose it does for me, but is I can play out a scenario in my mind really well. I used to use it to go to sleep. So when I was younger, I was homeless for a stretch on my own doing, because I didn't want to go to school and I didn't want to get a job. My mom said, if you don't want to do that, you can kick rocks. So I went and I kicked rocks. And I squatted in abandoned homes. It became very difficult to sleep. And one of the things that I was able to do was I was able to sort of play out a scenario in my mind, and it would help me to fall asleep. So I would think about like hitting the lottery, and I'd be able to really, in something almost close to real time, like, what would it be like to realize the ticket was a winning ticket? What would be the very next thing that you would do? And what would you do after that? And what would you, and by the time I'm done with all those, I've not even left the store in my mind yet. You know what I mean? So I'm really like dragging this out. And one of the things that kind of, I sharpened that ability. And one of the things it allowed me to do was like, I can think pretty critically about things. And I realized that like I could be, this is on the whole celebrity worship thing. It's like something could happen tomorrow to me where like somebody finds a show and they go, this is a great show and you should, you know, come here and be on this network or whatever. And then maybe I would get a bunch of money and I could sort of become a pseudo celebrity. And knowing that that could happen to me makes you realize that it could happen to absolutely anybody. And everybody that it does happen to is just a regular person They're no different than you. They're not at all different than you. And that makes it really gross when you start to think about celebrity worship and how far some people take it. It's like, I don't, I mean, maybe some of us are, like, maybe, you know, Kim Kardashian is actually like a Nephilim succubus or something like that. But for the most part, like, most people are just regular people, man. Mm-hmm. And, but there are, I mean, you know, you're watching a reality dating show and people are, you know, my wife is a big fan of like Love Island, and she'll show me some of the stuff that people say on the internet about these schmucks, and they're just regular people, but people are so immersed in their lives and the minutiae of every little thing that they do, and nobody's stopping to realize, like, oh my God, I'm putting all my thoughts and energy to like just a whole nother schmuck, just a schmuck that's just like me, that's no different than me, because it can happen to any of us. Anybody can, you know, step off a curb tomorrow and land themselves in a series of events that suddenly puts them in the public eye.
Yeah. And it really, then like you start to go down that frame of mind. It's like, well, if I become that celebrity, this and that, like, then you talk about like the whole devil's deal, right? Like, and I tell this to my wife all the time, like all these celebrities that you enjoy and appreciate, their lives are not really that great. I mean, I'm sure like they have all these great photos that they put on Instagram and all, like they're posing and all this. But their lives is just constantly go here, do this, go here, do this, go here, do this. It's not like they just sit around and enjoy it the whole time. Like, no, like they've basically signed a deal with the entertainment industry that basically owns them. I mean, it's why you never see actors retire. It's why you never see musicians retire, is because they're almost like compelled, either by their own volition or maybe external forces or blackmail, what, you can go down any kind of rabbit hole there, to always keep putting stuff out, keep working, doing that. I'm sure they love, some of them love it to a certain extent, but some of them, I don't think that's the case, because they're, looks like they're just kind of going through the motions. I mean, some of these actors are 70, 80, 90 years old. It's like,
it's,
man, just
sad.
Just give it, it's very sad. But then you're right. Like, you think about it, like, man, if I was a celebrity in that role, like I would do it differently. You know, I wouldn't do this or that, but it's like, it's a lot of times, like the choice goes out of your hands, and you see that, you do see that, to tie it into Star Wars, like with Anakin Skywalker, who became Darth Vader, this occult, you know, Emperor Palpatine, who, you know, going back to talking about Aleister Crowley, looks very much like an Aleister Crowley type character. He's in this black robe. He has this evil looking face, and he tells him, "Listen, if you join me, all your Napoleon Dynamite, all your wildest dreams will come true," right? he tells him that. He's like, "All your wildest dreams are coming true. Just come join me, and we're gonna band up forces, and we're gonna, you know, turn over this government, and we're just gonna kind of rule it together." Well, to get there, he had to go slaughter all of his friends. He had to try to kill his best friend. He basically, like, choked his wife, like, kill all these children. But hey, now you get the fruits of your labor, and ultimately, in the end, you know, the character of Darth Vader, I mean, as badass as he is, like, I'd say one, probably the number one, if not like the top five, like, villain of all time.
Easily.
When you really look at that character, he's really like we mentioned, you know, at the top, he's really kind of like a useful idiot for the Emperor. He's essentially kind of like an emotionless automaton that, you know, of course he turns good in the end, and that's great. But as badass as he is, he's subservient to somebody who's basically telling him what to do. And that happens whether it's a celebrity, whether it's all this other stuff. People want fame and success and all this, but like you're still working for somebody, right? You know, and if you're working for yourself, you're ultimately working for the devil at the end of the day. So I tell my wife, like, you know, a lot of these celebrities, they're still working for the man, just like we are, you know. So don't put them up on a pedestal. And I think it's worse, because a lot of them are, whether it's dealing with some occult force or whatever, like a lot of them probably are signing over their own lives to get more of this success and however that works. So it's really sad from that person's perspective too. So it's like, you know, it's not always greener on the other side, is what I always say, you know.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Bob Dylan. You ever see the Bob Dylan video where he's talking about selling his soul, and the interviewer says, "To whom?" And he says, "The king of this realm and a realm that we can't see," or "the king of this world in a world we can't see," which is interesting, because I know in the Bible it says that that Satan is the ruler of this realm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's pretty obvious who he's talking to.
Yeah, and even like, you know, talking about the musician Robert Johnson, who not everybody knows about, but same kind of deal, right? You know,
that was the Devil's Crossroads.
Yeah, one of the most famous blues singers of all time. This guy went away. He didn't really have much talent. He came back like 6 months to a year later, and he was just like the most amazing guitarist you've ever seen, and nobody really knew what happened. But that's the story. He went to this place and essentially made that deal. And he died very young. I think he was in that 27 club with all those musicians that died at 27, like Jimi Hendrix and I forget a few of the other ones. But he died very young. He got a lot of fame and a lot of success, but then he was gone. He was gone in an instant. So it was a very temporary, you know, deal, you know, for a very short time. Hey, you're going to have everything you want. But ultimately, if you don't turn your life to Christ, which, you know, a lot of these, the devil deals, a kind of concept like that, it's kind of a, you know, kind of a fantastical thing, but like there is always, as long as you're breathing, there is a chance to turn to Christ, I would say, unless you're taking the mark of the beast or something. That's something, you know, different. But, you know, these people think that that's the only way to fame and success is these deals with the devil, and it's ultimately leading to their own destruction.
It's interesting because I like to think, and you never know until you're tested, but I like to think that I don't have that mechanism, that I wouldn't take that deal. I've always felt that way, and I've seen enough because we have the internet now, and so it's like you can really peer behind the curtain and see a lot of these. You know, I think it was Juice WRLD. He died a couple of years back, and a video emerged of him recently, or maybe it was another rapper, 21 Savage. I forget who it was, where they were doing a video, and they go, okay, it's time to go sell my soul. The ritual started or whatever. And, you know, he didn't say it that flat. And he also sounded a lot cooler when he said it. But he shows behind him on the ice, you know, on the water in the winter. They have a pentagram in blood and a fire going and candles and people standing around it in robes. And he's walking off to go do whatever he's doing. And who knows, maybe that was for a music video that never got released or whatever. I know that the Island Boys recently came out and said that they sold their souls on a contract, and they weren't happy about it. And now they're doing super terrible crap to one another of the sexual nature on the internet, and they're brothers. It's fucking completely disgusting. And there's just no shortage of celebrities that you're going to like. I know Eminem is one of my favorite rappers, but I recognize him now to be just the complete cultural kind of snake that he really was. Like for my generation, especially, like we were raised on him. He was my first ever album that I owned as a child. And he was a venomous, terrible creature, you know, in so many ways. And he talks about in one of his songs, I think it's 3 a.m., where he does his voice, and then he speaks from the perspective of a demon, and the demon is the one that he sold his soul to. He even names it. He calls it Rain Man, and that becomes very interesting because Rain Man is one of what's called the 13... This gets really weird. Rain Man is an entity, one of 13 entities that is part of something called the Globes of Yog-Sothoth, and Yog-Sothoth is basically an H.P. Lovecraft Cthulian ancient one that you know, has power over these 13 globes. These globes represent these different entities, and each one can do a thing for you. And Rain Man is the money and fame entity, essentially. And so Eminem claims in this song to have sold his soul, or actually in a different song from the album Encore. And he even lays out the details of the deal. He's like, you know, I sold my soul to it, and the deal was that I would basically be granted all this success, but I'd be around long enough to watch my little girls grow. And so there's no shortage of artists that are laying out this soldier soul thing left and right. And what was his name? The artist with the crossroads?
Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson, that's right. You know, literally the father, in a lot of people's opinions, of rock and roll.
Yes.
So this is a story that's as old as time. And once again, I think we can throw it all the way back to the Beatles, maybe not the psychedelics aspect, but the being influenced by something else. So the psychedelics for the Beatles were a gateway to be influenced by, you know, wherever these ideas come from, just the ether. Or, you know, Miles Davis, who is moving culture. I'm sorry, not Miles Davis. Robert Johnson, who's moving culture. And his origin story starts with, you know, selling his soul. We're closing in on the hour and a half mark, and I unfortunately have to wrap it up. And I think we should definitely do a part two, because I know that you've dedicated a lot of time and episodes to this topic. So I know that it goes, there's just no shortage of all these comparisons to be made. But do you think that there's anything that you'd like to add? And there's no, I'm not saying I have a hard out in the next few minutes. I would be interested in hearing it if you have anything compelling that you think the audience should know in regards to this whole sort of body of work that you do.
No, you know, thanks for having me on. I definitely appreciate it. Yeah, I kind of have a cutoff here in a few minutes too. No, I think we got into a lot of areas. I really appreciate talking about music a little bit too, because it's one of those things that is so integral to all of our lives. And, you know, but there is something, if you really look into it, there's something that is can be dark and devious about it if you let it be. There's another Beatles reference, right?
yeah, I just caught that.
can't stop with it. There's nothing else I can think of right now. It's just, you know, I just caution people to, whether it's, we've kind of driven this point home a lot, but I think it bears mentioning again. You know, as like I said, as myself as a Christian, I want to live a godly life. I want to turn my eyes to Christ. I want to live my life in that manner. And am I perfect? No. And do I screw up all the time? Absolutely. You know, but I want to set my eyes towards Him and live my life in that way. And, you know, I've felt a lot of conviction recently about, which is why I've started talking more about the New Age stuff in Star Wars versus just, you know, like, oh, it's about government and rebellion and this and that. And I think there's more important concepts to talk about than just kind of some of the political machinations. So God's really put it on my heart to try to talk about these things in a different way, not to glorify them, you know, because that's the other thing I don't want to do as well. You know, I don't want to glorify this franchise. I don't want to glorify Disney. I don't want someone to have to, like, you know, like to listen to my podcast, you gotta watch all these Disney episodes. Like, no, I don't really care about that kind of stuff. And I want just people to understand things conceptually, that Satan has corrupted this world to such an extent that even some of these things that seem somewhat tame, there's a lot of nefarious things going on. And you can, that can make you paranoid to a certain extent, where it's like there's a demon behind every door. But it's just about using perception and using God's discernment that He gives you if you are, you know, a born again Christian, to understand what's going on. It's not to completely shut yourself off and become Amish, you know, although I can honestly, how things are going, I don't think that's a terrible way to live. You know, to be quite honest, but, you know, culture is going to be around, and I just want to, you know, use my content, my media as a way to turn people towards God, I'm not trying to be overly preachy about the kind of stuff I do. I want to just, you know, Jesus says in the Bible that, you know, He's the one that ultimately leads people towards Him. You know, as a Christian, I'm supposed to be planting seeds, right? Like, I'm not the ultimate gardener and harvester at the end of the day. He is. He's the one who separates the wheat from the chaff. He's the one who ultimately determines. But my goal, my objective is to, you know, spread these biblical truths, and wherever those seeds will fall as they may, they may be picked up, they may be thrown away. But, you know, it's my duty as a follower of Christ to put those out there. And I really appreciate you having me on here. Like, yeah, I definitely want to talk about more stuff. We've talked about Star Wars a little bit, you know, but there's probably a lot more we can get into. But I really appreciated how all over the place we went, to be honest, getting into the music industry and celebrities and all that kind of stuff. So thank you so much for having me. I'm definitely happy to come back on again anytime.
Of course, brother. You know, it's all over the place because it's all connected, right? You can't really talk about one thing in a vacuum because the same themes and the same sort of nefarious implications, they go across so many different things that are, you know, just at the forefront of our culture. And so, it, you know, that's just what's going to happen. The conversation is going to go there.
Oh, and one last thing I want to say, if you're watching this on a video stream, I have my Space is Fake and Gay shirt on.
Oh, please, can you stand up a little bit? I want to see that shirt because it says Space.
So it just says Star Wars is fake and gay. You know, I'm trying to posture so you can't really see my man boobs. But
I love Space is Fake and Gay.
And this is the one thing I want to say, because people give me crap about this all the time, and I think it's really retarded, to be honest. They say, well, you love Star Wars so much, so you must love space and the planets and everything that NASA tells us. Like, no, like, I don't believe a lot of that garbage, you know.
You love works of fiction.
Yeah, right, exactly. But they're like, well, you must think that we go to the moon, and you must think that we're like, no, come on, give me a break here. It's but you can see how people can pair those things together, and I'm sure a lot of people have gotten interested in space travel because of sci-fi and all that stuff.
But
I will say 100%, like, I believe all that. I do not believe any of that crap that they pump out about what's going on in the universe outside of where we live now, to be honest. So
that's so funny, though, because we didn't even touch on that. But as soon as you said that, in my mind, I was like, oh, my God, we forgot how sci-fi is this massive component in working in tandem with NASA in selling the lie.
selling the lie
that sci-fi is part of sci-fi's job.
Right, but like, you know, like you mentioned, like there's Lord of the Rings, there's Harry Potter, there's Star Wars. The environment that those are in, for me, I don't care about it at all. Like, I'm not interested in the mechanics of space travel or hyperspace. Like, it's just this story. It's just this mythical story. It just so happened, like, he wanted to put it in a space environment, right? Like, a lot of the mechanics of it don't make any sense at all. That you can just go a zillion miles an hour. Oh, there, I'm where I want to be. It's great. Like, none of it makes
Nobody
none of that stuff makes
paste in the cockpit.
right. None of that stuff makes any sense. Like, you know, rocket launcher. All this. It's all silly. So, like, I will say to anybody that wants to combat me on that, like, no. Just because I like Star Wars does not mean I'm into. I'm not a NASA fanboy. All the stuff they pump out is garbage.
Well, you mentioned before the whole thing with the Amish and how it gets ever more appealing. Sometimes I do fantasize about an EMP or something like that going off and just the internet goes down and me and my son just go in the backyard and read until it's too dark to read.
Right, yeah.
Until a time like that comes, people like Kyle, people like myself, we're still going to continue to make content, try to shed some light on some weird crap for anyone who will listen. Kyle, if you could, one last time, tell the audience where they can find you and where they can find your work.
Sure. So you can find me at conspiracy_Kyle, and that's conspiracy with the K. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. The podcast is called Conspiracy in the Force. This conspiracy with a C, just to, you know, just confuse everybody. So you can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts. And, you know, I wrote a book about this kind of stuff a few years ago. It's called Intergalactic Totalitarianism. Sounds like it should be like a college course. Like, it'd be more interesting than any college course they have out there right now. But it kind of talks about a lot of stuff we've been mentioning about how these governments manipulate people to get in line and everything. So the links to that are in my social media stuff. So if anybody's interested in checking that out, you can find that there.
That is awesome. I didn't know you. One more time, what was the book called?
Oh, it's called Intergalactic Totalitarianism. And like, if anybody's watching the video, I had this guy draw this really cool cover art. It's just the Death Star destroying Earth. You know, because I believe in all of the globe propaganda and all that stuff, right? As they say.
That's awesome. So guys, go in and check out Kyle on Twitter, check out his podcast and the book. I think I'll be picking up the book. That's pretty cool. I like to collect books from my guests, so I'll definitely be picking it up to add to the collection. I just picked up one of my previous guests, Vicky Joy Anderson's book, and it was, I believe, It Comes in the Night. It was all about sleep paralysis. And so I'm actually holding off on reading it because I'd like to be able to have a good night without weird, spooky crap happening to me. And I don't know that I want to lay down in bed and read a book called It Comes in the Night. I'd rather wake up on like a Saturday morning in broad daylight and read it in the sun Right. Just right. Not in the darkness right. of my room.
For sure.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. Kyle, thank you so much for coming on. I'd love to have you on again. It was a great conversation. I know it was a little bit all over the place, but I wouldn't have had it any other way because I was just so excited to talk about all the stuff that we touched on. So absolutely. I'd love to do it again sometime. You have an open door policy, brother.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. You have a good night.